I will call the remote hearing of the local government division to order. This meeting is being held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. And all remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. And today is March 30th, 2020. How's that for looking ahead? Josh, if you'll take the roll, please.
Good morning, Representative Mason.
Present.
Representative Elkins. Representative Kwan.
Present.
Representative Burton.
Present.
Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Hewitt.
Present.
Representative Macklin.
Present.
Representative Olson.
Present.
Representative Yuakim.
Present.
Representative Elkins. All but Elkins are present.
Okay, thank you. The next item on the agenda is the minutes, and they're for March 23rd, 2022. Representative Qualm, have you read the minutes?
I will move the minutes, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any additions or corrections? All those in favor, please unmute and say aye.
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 Those opposed, the minutes stand approved. The first bill we have for consideration today is House File 4661. And I'd like to be done with this by 9 o'clock, just to be on the safe side. I will move that House File 4661 be recommended to be re-referred to State Government Finance and Elections Committee. Representative Lisselgard, welcome to our committee, and to your bill, please.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is the first time I've ever been in your committee. So
I think
thank
it
you.
Is.
Yeah. So this bill aims to update a statute written in 1909. Minnesota Statute 465-50 was written into law over 110 years ago. It only allows for a city to spend $300 on a Memorial Day. And in today's dollars, that'd be right around $10,000. And so being proactive, this legislation updates the statute to request a city or local government to spend up to $10,000. This change would not cost the state of Minnesota anything, only provide a limited increase for our veterans and fallen heroes who deserve that. So I think this is long overdue, 1909 to 2022. I think that we could update this. So I do have one gentleman who is a friend and a colleague and a veteran here to testify.
Okay. And is that Steve Biondich?
That is, yes, Councillor Steve Biondich, actually.
Okay. And if you would say your name for the record and proceed, please.
Stephen Biondich from Biwabik, Minnesota. Representative, I think Representative Lisselgard pretty much summed up everything. I just wanted to be proactive as we come into a demographic change with our veterans organizations and the way we conduct our Memorial Day services. There was some stuff in the news in recent years where this has been limiting, and I thought to myself, this could affect us very soon, and we're going to need some help from our cities and municipalities to get these services done. And I wanted to get the change updated so that the municipalities could, in fact, spend more money at their discretion.
Okay. Thank you. And
thank you.
I see that Representative Olson has his hand up.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So this would be a question for the author. Is this bill specific to the city of Duluth, or is that requirement of only $300, is that for the state entirely? And is this bill fixing Duluth's issue, or is it fixing it as an entirety for the entire state? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Lisselgard.
Madam Chair and Representative, so I'm going to be offering an amendment because currently the statute that I'm proposing is for $75,000 and above. You're correct that this issue did stem from Duluth, but it sparked the conversation across greater Minnesota and the people that I represent. And that's why this was brought to me. And when you look at the state holistically, there are veterans across the whole state of Minnesota and communities that truly want to be able to honor them. So that is what this bill will do. So this bill will not be just specifically for the city of Duluth. This will be for any municipality that wants to spend in honor of their veterans and their communities.
Representative Olson.
All I would say to that is excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Okay. Representative Lisselgard, do you have any closing remarks?
No, I would just appreciate your support. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We will now take the vote. Josh, please.
Representative Mason.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Kwan.
Yes.
Representative Byrd.
Aye.
Representative Bolden.
Aye.
Representative Hewitt.
Aye.
Representative Mecklen.
Aye.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Yuakin.
Aye.
We have 9 ayes.
Okay, thank you. Representative, you are on your way. Have a good day, and thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair.
Next, we have House File 4317. And members, I'd like to be able to vote on this bill before we adjourn. And today is our last scheduled meeting for this regular scheduled meeting. So again, it is important that we get this done. I will move House File 4317 recommended to be re-referred to the State Government Finance and Elections Committee. And Representative Thompson, you have an amendment. Do you want us to take that amendment up first?
Yes, Chair. Thank you. Thank you so much to the committee for having me. I do have a DE1 amendment to offer, and actually the DE1 amendment, it does 2 things to correct the original bill. The first is it adds the appropriation amount of $40 million, and then second, makes the following changes. Section 1 is identical to House File 4317 as introduced. It establishes a new affordable homeownership incentive account in the Metropolitan Council. Metropolitan Council's Livable Communities Fund. Second, creates a new section for the Affordable Homeownership Incentive account. This eliminates any confusion about the criteria applicable to the Affordable Homeownership Incentive account. That provision in House File 4317 is, as introduced, it was added as a subdivision to the section. And Section 3 appropriates the $40 million from the general fund for the Affordable Homeownership Incentive account. Also, instead of an effective date, Section 1 placed the appropriate effective dates that dates after each section in the DE amendment. Finally, where the word commissioner was mentioned, it was changed to the council for the Metropolitan Council. And Madam Chair, House File 4317, as amended, creates a $40 million affordable homeownership account at the Met Council. The account can be drawn by the cities for the purpose of developing single-family affordable housing units for homeownership opportunities for the African-American African immigrants here in our state. And other protected groups to close the home ownership gap between the wealthy and the poor in the metro area. Madam Chair, members, I have a few speakers also. I talk a lot, and I'll keep talking, so I won't be quiet. But I have a few speakers that I would like to bring. They have bring a lot of expertise in this area, and I'd like to, you know, have the committee hear from them in support of the bill. And they can definitely help me with clarifying any questions that the members have. And so with that, Chair, I would like to call on...
First we need to do the DE1 amendment. And members, if you would unmute, all those in favor of adopting the DE1 amendment, say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Okay. The amendment is adopted. And Representative Thompson, it sounds like you've already kind of addressed your bill in general, so you want to go straight to the testifiers.
I heard you say you try to get done by a certain time, and so
right.
I
appreciate that. As I said, it's our last meeting, so we got to get it done. Go ahead. Bruce Corey to testify, and sir, if you would say your name for the record and then proceed, and welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Chair Mason, and members of the committee, thank you for the honor of offering some testimony. My name is Dr. Bruce Corey. I'm an economist at Concordia University. And by way of context, over the past 2.5 decades, I've been documenting the economic contributions of the African, Latino, Asian, and Native American Alana communities in Minnesota. And I estimate that this ethnic economy is around $1.4 trillion, which is bigger than the GDP of Mexico. And this economy needs representation because as you know, there are some big gaps in disparities in the state. And just closing this gap, my estimate, would add $287 billion to the Minnesota economy. In the context of this bill, I want to make the point that investment in the Black or African American immigrant economy is not a zero-sum game. Rather, investments in this economy will help the larger economy in Minnesota grow through increase in jobs, output, income, federal, state, and local taxes. So I have an economic model that the Alana Brain Trust has been using on what would be the economic impact of closing these gaps. I want to share these implications for you. So, for instance, in the area of housing, if we close the $12.8 billion Black-White housing gap, this would support an estimated $20 billion increase in output in the Minnesota economy, supporting 67,000 jobs and $3.2 billion in wages, and another $2.4 billion in federal, state, and local taxes. And as you know, that a lot of these communities are renters, and so again, when we apply this model, we find that the African American immigrant renters put about $960 million every year into the economy as rental payments. And so this spending that they do support an estimated $1.5 billion increase in output in the Minnesota economy, supporting over 5,000 jobs and $242 million in wages and $182 million in federal, state, and local taxes. So there is a lot of economic benefit that's going to happen both to the African-American, African immigrant economy by these investments in housing to close the gap, but also the positive benefit for the rest of Minnesota, as well as increase in federal, state, and local taxes. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Next, I have Kizzy Downey. And again, if you would identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Greetings, Chair Mason and members of the committee. My name is Kizzy Downey. I am the CEO of Model Cities of St. Paul, a nonprofit organization created in 1967. Our mission is to promote social and economic prosperity by providing access to opportunities that develop and stabilize families and communities. For 55 years, Model Cities has worked to strengthen the economic and social fabric of the local community through our work in the areas of homelessness, affordable housing, home ownership, and youth services. In addition to our work as a community-based developer, we are also a HUD-approved housing counseling agency, providing home ownership education and counseling services for those looking to purchase a home. Much of our work over the years has been focused on reducing disparities in housing and home ownership, particularly for Black households and for other households of color. Last year, nearly 60% of the individuals we served through our home ownership services identified as Black or people of African descent. Despite the many efforts that Model Cities and many other agencies are making to address disparities in home ownership, racial home ownership disparities continue to grow between Black and white households. According to statistics, Black home ownership rates were higher in 1950 than today, and we are definitely moving in the wrong direction. The full investment of our state is needed to eliminate these gaps in home ownership for African Americans, African immigrants, and other protected groups. As you will hear from others, others regarding House File 4317, additional resources are desperately needed to create a new affordable home ownership incentive account to support home ownership opportunities for African Americans, African immigrants, and other protected groups. The time is now to work together to close the racial gaps in home ownership, and we hope that you will invest in House File 4317 and other bills that are focused on creating opportunities that meet the critical home ownership needs of our local community. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, I would like to get through all the testifiers before we take questions. So if you would just write down your questions, please. Next, David McGee, please. And again, identify yourself for the record.
Yeah, my name is David McGee, and I'm the executive director for Build Wealth Minnesota. Thanks, Madam Chair, for the opportunity, and committee members for the opportunity to speak this morning. I've been working for Build Wealth, and one of the founders of Build Wealth Minnesota, been around for since 2004. We have been helping a number of families. Our goal is to help families through some real long-term financial education and resources and coaching to get them to build sustainable social and economic wealth, not just home ownership, and also helping them to strengthen social issues that they've gone through for generations. And we also are a HUD-approved counseling agency and a HUD-approved lender. We're also a community development financial institution, which is a designation given by the U.S. Department of Treasury. And we're also a financial opportunity center through the Local Initiatives Support Corporation. So we work with hundreds of families every year trying to transform them and get them into sustainable home ownership. Since 2005, we've been diligently working to address the disparity gaps here in the state of Minnesota. When we started back in 2005, the home ownership rate for African Americans was 31%, and it's now 19%. In the city of Minneapolis, 16% in the city of St. Paul, and much lower in some of the greater Minnesota. And so the prior Kizzy Downey had just testified, the gap is widening and is going the wrong way. We desperately need support of anything that we can do for affordable housing, as the prices of housing is skyrocketing and the cost of developing home ownership is going at an enormous rate, much higher than incomes. We also have an income disparity for communities of color as well. With your investment in File 4317 provides Met Council the opportunity to provide subsidies and additional investment in building affordable housing. Inventory is at an all-time low, and as you probably hear, the market is just going crazy with many more buyers than there are houses that are available. And so finding a way to build inventory is critical at this time. With the high cost of development, the low income we're going to need as much investment in this to address disparities. So we critically need this investment from the state, and all, it's almost all hands on deck in this season to try to move this forward. So I'm wholeheartedly asking your committee and Madam Chair for you to support this bill all the way to completion, so that it's able to get the appropriation it needs to assist in building more inventory in our communities. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you. Next, I have Naida Presley, and hopefully that's close to pronouncing them correctly. Please identify yourself.
You were right. You were right on.
Oh, cool.
Right on. Again, thank you to you, Madam Chair, and the committee for having us today. Again, my name is Naida Presley. I'm here representing the NAACP, St. Paul Branch, the Roy Wilkins Memorial Branch 4052. The mission of the NAACP St. Paul Branch is to ensure the political, educational, social, and economic equality of rights of all persons, and to eliminate racial hatred and racial discrimination. Our five core pillars are political equality, educational equality, social equality, economic equality, and to eliminate racial discrimination. We see this bill as one of a very important tool in the toolbox that will address and impact all of those core values and fully support the mission of the NAACP St. Paul Branch. We have been a civil rights organization, have been around for 109 years here in St. Paul, celebrating our 109th year. And nationally, the NAACP has been around for 112 years. We support this bill because for all of the reasons that my previous speakers have said, but we really want to look at what is the return on this investment. And we see that it's an equity opportunity. It's creating the greatest possibilities to lower these gaps in home ownership between African American and African immigrants in this country. But we also look at it as wealth building, not only for the homeowner, but it will be generational wealth building. And as Dr. Corey said, it will not only increase wealth for the individual families and generational wealth, but for the state as well. We look at it's going to reach out to lower income families by providing funds to help support the gaps in for lower income families to access and become homeowners. We also look at this as creating sustainable neighborhoods and stable neighborhoods. And then again, it's creating safer neighborhoods. So it's a public safety way to create public safety for our neighborhoods. And it's also very strongly improve the academic success of our young people being able to live in stable homes and in stable neighborhoods. And last but not least, as David McGee said, we need to increase the inventory. And this incentive fund will do just that. It will increase the inventory and will help developers in our communities be able to increase their capacity to do and build or rehab more housing. With that, I want to thank you again for having me here and allowing me to give testimony to this great opportunity.
Madam Chair, you're muted.
Sorry about that. For those of you that do not have the agenda or the list of testifiers, if you go to the Minnesota House of Representatives Local Government Committee, you'll find the agenda and written testimony, et cetera. And next, I have Karen Reed. And again, if you would identify yourself and proceed, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Karen Reed. I'm with the Neighborhood Development Alliance, NEDA. I'm here to support House File 4317 because we find this bill could become an important tool to increase the financing for to increase affordable home ownership opportunities. NEDA has served the metro area's Latina Hispanic communities since 1995. We are a HUD-certified home ownership counseling agency with six bilingual Latina counselors on staff, all HUD-certified. And we also are a community development financial institution, which provides rehab loans and credit builder loans to help people qualify for mortgages. Last year, we served over 750 people through financial coaching, pre-purchase counseling, foreclosure prevention. 85% were people of color and 68% were Latinos. One of our big classes that helps people get into home ownership is called Home Stretch. We served 190 people through those classes. At the completion of them, they get a certificate that qualifies them for down payment assistance through a variety of programs. Unfortunately, last year out of the class, only 35% could actually achieve home ownership. And this is due in large part to, I think, three barriers. The inventory for starter homes that are between 250 to 300,000. That seems very high to me, but I'm kind of old. But that's starting homes. The ability to compete in a market with multiple bids that include the ability of some to come in over the asking price by $10,000 to $20,000 in cash. Our homeowners, our prospective homeowners, have a mortgage and limited cash to compete for these bids. And the growing competition with investors who come in to purchase homes for rent or Airbnbs. That has been increasing across the board, and I believe it's been in the newspapers and on television. NEDA is also working with the Home Coalition on a state level to increase the number of entry-level homes. The goal is to build and acquire rehab and resell up to 500 units a year. It'll take a while to get there, but we want to do that. And we're working to provide more home ownership opportunities and to decrease the disparities among white and African-American immigrants, Latinos, and other immigrant groups. One of the things that should be recognized, that according to Minnesota Housing Research, there are 61,000 BIPOC renters with sufficient income to purchase a home but continue to rent at all affordable levels. If we can provide the resources for people to purchase and the inventory, we could actually free up more affordable rental properties across the state. And really, that's, thank you.
Thank you so much. Next, Linda Sloan. And please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Mason
and committee members. My name is Linda Sloan, and I'm the Executive Director for the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage. I am here to encourage you to support House File 4317 regarding affordable home ownership. I want to draw your attention to three components of the home ownership gap as it impacts Black Minnesotans. Our state has a particular problem of Black housing instability regarding Black home ownership in Minnesota. The gap in Black and white home ownership rates is 50%, which is almost twice the size of the national gap. Secondly, the home ownership gap is a racial problem, not just an economic problem. Even after accounting for economic and demographic differences, the Black home ownership rate is still 33% lower than white households. His history of anti-Black discrimination, legacies of slavery, Jim Crow segregation, redlining, and other anti-Black policies have brought us to this point. The home ownership gap has direct impact on Black wealth and long-term economic and social problems in the Black community. Our council supports legislation that would incentivize local public and private investments in affordable home ownership initiatives and other economic needs of Minnesotans of African heritage as a protected class within our civil rights laws. The provisions in House File 4317 would do exactly this. The proposal would establish resources to review lending and fair housing practices, increase down payment assistance for Black Minnesotans. You've heard about increasing access to credit counseling services. It would help facilitate the upward climb from public assistance to home ownership. And it would also create equal opportunities for housing development in the metro area. I want to thank Representative Thompson for carrying this much needed important legislation. And I would also like to thank you as the committee and the chair for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 4317. Thank you and have a good day.
Thank you. Next, Lisa Barajas.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. Sorry, I was just getting myself unmuted here. You'd think I'd have it down by now. For the record, I'm Lisa Barajas, Executive Director of Community Development at the Metropolitan Council. And like all of our testifiers have said today, and the author has brought up, this is a very important issue in the metro area. Housing disparities between white households in the Twin Cities and households of color, particularly African-American households and African households and Latino households, are some of the greatest disparities in the nation. It's something the council has highlighted as part of its planning process and brought to the forefront for conversation in the region, and something we've been working to tackle. We wholeheartedly agree with the goals in closing that home ownership gap between households of color and white households in the region. And in fact, it's a strategy in the Metropolitan Council strategic plan and the basis for the council's new affordable home ownership pilot that we are launching this year that is focused on building housing production housing production, building more inventory in the region. However, the council has limited funds to do this work and has just $2 million to put into that pilot this year that can get you some homes, but not a lot of homes. But we like to say we try to make a difference with the dollars that we do have at our disposal. In the affordable housing world, we think about the seven key ingredients to the spectrum of housing that a lot of the testifiers spoke to today: down payment assistance, home ownership counseling, credit and lending, civil and consumer rights, marketing and outreach, homeowner sustainability, and housing production. The council is currently set up and its current programs, including the local housing incentives account, which is part of the livable communities funds, are wholly set up for that last bullet, for housing production, where we can build and help support the building a larger inventory of housing in the region. And that's what the livable communities funds were initially set up to do. In reading the proposal, that last section three of the proposed bill focuses on particular items that the last testifier mentioned around, credit counseling and down payment assistance, as well as looking at lending practices. And those are items that are not necessarily well within the council's existing scope of expertise. And certainly a number of folks on this call today have already mentioned how they're already set up to do this work. And the bill appears to focus on those items in particular, that down payment assistance and homeownership counseling, credit and lending. And so we are just a little confused about how that would work. We've heard a lot about the importance of inventory. We are always support additional funding for building out inventory in the region, and we're definitely set up to do that. As far as the other items, we feel that they're really important parts of the housing spectrum, but our responsibilities that other agencies or organizations are best equipped to take on and make an impact on right away. For example, Minnesota Housing Finance Agency already has a down payment assistance program and credit counseling as part of their home ownership programs. They could hit the ground running with a new cash infusion like this if that is the intent, is to focus on those types of activities, for example. Similarly, we also know a number of cities and counties within the Twin Cities region and nonprofit organizations that, like those that have been testifying today, have similar programs and are HUD certified to do counseling. We really support directly funding organizations like that to do this work, and kind of cut out the middleman, if you will, the council as the middleman, to pass through those dollars to folks. Of course, in inventory, we are always happy to expand funding in inventory. I know I've spoken earlier at this committee about funding for that. So, in short, as it's written, it appears that the council would be responsible for some of these activities that right now we are not set up to do, but a number of agencies, existing agencies, both government and nonprofits, are already on the ground doing. And we find that it would be more impactful to directly fund those agencies and organizations immediately to have the type of urgency that is needed to address the issues. So with that, I also just wanted to mention just a couple of things in addition to that launch that we have. We feel that some of the items that were discussed today or mentioned in the bill are things that we actually can already do and are doing within our local housing incentives account that's part of Livable Communities, like that home ownership pilot that I launched. That local housing incentives account is meant to build that inventory across the region of affordable housing opportunity. We split that into two programs of home ownership as well as rental, and partner in a super consolidated RFP with Minnesota Housing to review applications and to distribute funds with them as well as the affordable home ownership opportunity account program that we are launching this year that really is meant to focus on closing those gaps with the dollars that we have available. One other item I'd like to mention about transitioning households from public assistance to home ownership is that our Metro HRA, which is one of the larger housing authorities in the metro area, we serve a territory of about 96 communities with our Housing Choice Voucher Program, which is about approximately 7,000 vouchers that we have within that program and the largest Housing Choice Voucher Program in the state of Minnesota. With our allowable within that program and an opportunity that we are exploring is the program for transitioning to home ownership under federal rules that allow us to create home ownership programs for folks who are able to transition off of that public assistance of housing that the Housing Choice Voucher offers and move into an ownership program using vouchers as part of their down payment program. So we're exploring that. We know of just a handful of other public agencies within the state of Minnesota who have similar but smaller programs, and we have connected with them to learn about what's working and not working and to help inform the creation of that program within our service area. So I just wanted to offer that there are some things that we can already do. We certainly would support additional cash infusion. I agree wholeheartedly with all of our testifiers about the importance of investment and not just the impact to our households, but also the impact to our region and the state of Minnesota, that helping households get into home ownership can just have so many secondary and tertiary benefits, from education to employment to health and you name it. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions you might have, and thank you for the opportunity today, Madam Chair.
Thank you. That is the last person that I have to testify, and I'll wait 1 minute to see if anybody else comes forward. And seeing no other hands,
excuse me, I'm sorry. This is not you to press me again. I forgot to say two things. I'm the first vice president of the St. Paul NAACP chapter. So I wanted, and the chair of the political action team. So I wanted to put that on, give you that information for the record.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Representative Olson, I think you were first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this question will be going to, I believe it's Mr. Corey, the first testifier. You mentioned that as it currently is, there's $900 million that's being put into the economy from this group of individuals based off of rent. And then you made the claim that if we were to assist them in purchasing houses, then that would increase their economic input into our system to be about $1.5 billion. Now, that seems like an awesome thing, and I think that we always desperately need to be moving forward with trying to grow our economy. But I'm wondering if that data is just discounting the property tax and the maintenance that the current housing providers are already paying in. Is that going to be two steps forward, two steps backwards, and we haven't gained anything because we're just replacing the person who's paying the property tax and paying for the maintenance? Or is this actually going to be spurring our economy and doing something more? Whereas I think that if we could make it easier to afford houses, we could build houses in this state at a rate that is even that of Wisconsin. I think that might actually be a push forward in the game. So that's my question. Thank you so much.
Dr. Corey.
Chair Mason, Representative Olson, thank you for your question. If I understand your question right, you are talking about the wealth building capabilities of investing in affordable housing. By way of background, I was for a while the Director of Planning and Economic Development for the City of St. Paul, and I engaged with housing developers all the time. And one of the things that there's a great incentive that we can have is as we build houses also to build equity in the people who rent the houses so they can transition out in the future to own their own houses. So the economic impact that I mentioned was the rental payments that are generated by these group renters into the economy. And if there are other things that can add to build their wealth, that's only is going to have more impact. And then this act of spending by the renters influences the businesses that they go, the shopping and our services that they take, and that in turn also has these net positive tax impacts. I hope I'm answering the question that you raised.
Representative Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Corey. I appreciate that. So if I'm hearing you correctly, then it won't only be the property taxes, it won't only be fixing the toilet that you're now responsible for, but it's these individuals are now building some wealth, moving forward, actually climbing those steps and being able to, you know, influence their society by purchasing more in their economy as well. So I appreciate that, if that's correct.
Dr. Corey?
Chair Mason, Representative Olson, yes, you're right. One of my dreams is mechanisms where as we build these affordable housings, we set in a fund that will help build this equity in the people as they make their monthly payments and for the positive impacts that you mentioned. Thank you.
Anything else, Representative Olson?
No, thank you, Chair.
Okay. Representative Meekland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a huge problem. I agree with much of what's been said here, you know, and we've heard in this committee quite a bit this year already with Representative Elkins' attempts to identify how we can achieve affordable housing. We've heard a lot of conversation today about the lack of, you know, houses that are there, but there's also this massive lack of labor of people who actually are skilled to do the work. In the context of this, though, you know, I'm also on the Affordable Housing Commission that we meet, and this, you know, the gaps have all been discussed. So I have some questions as to how this would solve many of the burdens that Representative Elkins has pointed out, that I've pointed out. One being, the property tax statements are just going out now, and we're seeing some pretty significant increases. I haven't even intentionally opened mine because I don't want to know right now. And this can be $200-$500 a month of the, you know, over the each year of just property tax. And how would this address some of those concerns? And especially now when we see this massive inflation going on and the price of fuel right now, if you recall back to 2008 housing debacle, I, as a contractor, my accounts were all with the large production builders. And in 2006, when the gas price shot up heavily, All the new buyers, the young buyers, all backed out of their purchase agreements, which literally destroyed our entire everything back then. So as we see what's happening now, that same occurrence is going to be coming forward as I talk to many of my realtor friends. And I guess I have a handful of questions, but one would be like, would this even come close to kissing the tip of the problem of what Elkins has been trying to work on as well as myself? And how can we get from where we are with, I mean, you know, a big part of this problem comes from too much government. And now we're asking government to backfeed the problems that they've created. We see the massive fees for zoning and or the requirements within zoning, the permitting fees, the developer fees, the cost of materials, the supply chain issues, the lack of labor. I mean, and all of this is, you know, largely done from different levels of government. So to me, this is a great portion to coming to tour this problem, but there are so many aspects that come into this. So one thing I would actually like to ask, I don't know if we have nonpartisan research, but there was recently an ag grant that went out, and it was for only, I believe, people of color that didn't stand up to the test of the court. Would this fall into that same category if it's narrowly only available for one demographic?
As I understand, and she's on, Ms. Griffin, please proceed.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Meckland, unfortunately, I'm not familiar with the grant that you're talking about, but I'd be happy to confer with my colleagues and get back to you on your question.
Thank you. Representative Meckland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, you know, this would be a great probably piece and component to what Representative Elkins has been working on, as well as myself and, you know, the housing and all the different stakeholders out there. This is going to be obviously a much bigger problem. I know I mentioned, I think it was in the Affordable Housing Commission meeting we had a couple of months ago, that there, in the last debacle, there was a massive hedge fund that swooped in and bought up several thousand homes. And interestingly, as they built up their inventory, they then scaled their staff way down just to do nothing more than manage the ones that they had bought, and they pretty much pulled out of buying. However, in the last 2 weeks, I have repeatedly seen their trucks on my way to St. Paul. There are a lot of them back in town again. So something tells me that they're coming back to buy many, many more homes. I won't say their name. I did say it before. I got a little bit of a, you know, message after the fact, but they are the largest real estate owner in the nation, and I find it very amazing that I am seeing their trucks all over the place, particularly on 35 coming into the Capitol. So there must be a hot spot over there that they're looking for. But I understand the intent of this. I think Representative Elkins, I see he's got his hand up now. He himself can explain how complex this issue really is, and there are so many fingers to this ugly mess. And I would like to see, you know, a lot of these barriers removed, quite frankly. And just to give you a little example as a trade guy, when they implemented the lead law, it drove the cost up of rehabbing these homes so exponentially that it made everything much more complicated. And a lot of people chose that there were so many penalties. If you miss one minor little detail, that a lot of the trade people said it's not worth it. So they just got out of it altogether, so they don't work on pre-74 homes. I'm one of them. And they live at 74. So, you know, while I get the intent, I don't know that this thing has the testicular fortitude to actually get it accomplished what it's needed to be done, because there's so much in there. And thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to take Representative Joaquin next, and then Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to quick thank, sorry, it's been a long morning already. I just want to thank Representative Meckland for bringing up how complicated this program is with affordable housing. If there was one answer to affordable housing issue that we're in crisis, frankly, that we're having right now, we would have already found it. So I want to thank Representative Thompson for bringing this creative bill forward. I know that you'll continue to work on it to make it implementable, and it's just important for us to hear these voices today and what's going on in all of our communities, and make sure that folks all folks get a good start. I especially resonates with me when it comes to our youngest learners and how they need to start out to be successful because they really are the future too. So I just want to thank all of the testifiers as well for all the work you're doing in this area. And we need many different layers of support to address this affordable housing crisis and allowing and helping people to build equity. And if you're worried about property taxes, you're going to love our tax bill coming up. We have a lot of ongoing property tax cuts in that bill. So I look forward to discussing that with you as well.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt, and then Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Thompson, thank you. Great bill. This is a really needed bill, as a, not only as a representative for the state, but also I'm a realtor. And the problem with some of these programs, though, and I want to make sure that as long as you guys are starting one here, that we look at this. Just share with you my last offer, which was actually in your district, Representative Thompson. We couldn't even get my applicant in there who qualifies for a conventional loan, but does not qualify for the neighborhood program that was sponsoring the redevelopment in that neighborhood for some weird reason that his income was too low. And he had the down payment and all that. So I think some of these programs don't really go where they need to go. And the other thing is that definitely, I mean, we have corporate America, Wall Streeters coming in and buying up our single family houses right now and basically flipping them and making, you know, 20% margin on them. And they're happy with that. There's a whole other area that we need to look at as legislators that really focus on the single family American dream. I mean, the used housing stock is out there, but I mean, Sunday's offer had 32 offers on a house for $170,000 in West St. Paul. That's a lot, and it's hard to compete with that. And so I think there's there's other things that we have to dig into. I think this is a great program, and you're right. Anything we can do for definitely this kind of legislation is important. But I do have a question, and I don't know what testifier can take this, and I'm sorry if I missed it. But I understand that there is a number in the BIPOC community of people that actually qualify for homes that basically don't get the attention they need. And I heard it's as high as 40 to 50%. Is that, can anybody talk about that at all?
Is there somebody that wants to respond to that? If you would just raise your hand.
Here, can I refer that question to Ed McDonald?
Pardon? Representative Thompson?
Can I defer that question to Ed McDonald?
Oh, yes, please. Mr. McDonald? If you'll identify yourself and proceed.
I think he's muted too, Madam Chair.
Sir, check to make sure that you're unmuted.
Madam Chair, Representative Thompson, I think the two people that can get close to that, that's kind of a hard thing to quantify. I've not seen that information myself, but David at Build Wealth, who's working directly with families, and certifying them for homeownership, or Kizzy might be able to answer the question if they're still on. David, you want to try that question?
Okay, Mr. McGee, are you there? I'm not seeing his name.
Yes,
oh, great. Mr. McGee, proceed, please.
I don't know about I don't have all the numbers directly about it, but I mean, we've got a number of families that have been turned down. There's, you know, from conditioning in terms of being prepared to be able to buy a home, but have been turned down, have been scared to death as it relates to a lot of folks that have gotten caught in the foreclosure crisis. A lot of them have not been. That's why we're trying to educate as many about the systems as possible. That financial education about the processes is critical. that these families get informed about the possibilities. There's some folks that think that homeownership just isn't for them. It's just for white people. And it's just for people who have resources, when a lot of them do qualify, but just by accessing predatory products that have injured their families over generations makes them feel that homeownership is just so out of reach and so far away. And so we're dealing with that. That's another social component of conditioning over time, of discrimination and a lack and a lack of opportunity. And so it's going to take, as I said earlier, it's going to take all hands on deck, and education around these systems is going to be critical to get at that large group of folks that are actually in a position to purchase a home and qualify and have good credit scores. We serve hundreds of families every year that have great credit scores, have the incomes, but the fear of possibility of not being able to access something or having it taken away through foreclosure or through systems that are beyond their control. Like the foreclosure crisis was beyond most of our control. That was a investment situation where you had folks that were doing really crazy credit products and getting people into home ownership way prematurely where they couldn't afford it. And so, once again, education is going to be key. We've got a program called 9,000 Equities where we're educating folks, trying to get 9,000 families into homes. But education is going to be the critical key of making sure they're able to get in and make it a sustainable process and a legacy for building generational wealth for their families. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Downey, did you want to respond? Ms. Downey?
Chair Mason, I think Mr. Corey put his hand up.
I did see that. Okay. Dr. Corey, if you would like to proceed, please.
Chair Mason and Representative Hewitt, I just wanted to add the point that you made about the crunch of the market. I know a person who has lost a bid on 6 times. They have the money to buy the house, but they've been outbid by cash only. They've been outbid probably by hedge fund kind of investments, and they can't buy the house. So that's a serious challenge that to homeownership by our Alana communities these days. Thank you for raising that.
If I could close,
Representative Hewitt.
Last statement. Thank you. Yeah, and there is no question that we as legislators have to do a lot more, even with the purchase agreement. There's many things on that purchase agreement that should be thrown out because you can use practices that are unethical within the purchase agreement. I've had talks with the Realtor Association about this, and I think they're willing to look at it. But we have a long way to go to make sure everybody gets an equitable chance at buying a home, even at the negotiation table. So I really appreciate this legislation, and I think it's a really a good thing to move this forward today. So thank you, Representative Thompson. Good work.
Representative Elkins, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I think this bill is a really good idea. It may not be completely practical to implement yet, but I will personally pledge to Representative Thompson that I will work with him to render this bill practical. And I will vote to, advance it to the State Government Committee today as well. But I also do want to, reinforce the comments that several of the testifiers and representative have raised today is that if all we do is pour more money into programs that support the demand for this housing and do nothing to increase the supply, we really haven't solved the problem. We've had, testifier after testifier today talk about the shortage in the supply of starter homes, and it just keeps getting worse. So, I have a bill, and if more of you would give me votes for that bill that would, open up the supply side as well, I think we could make great strides here. But I do want to thank Representative Thompson for working on this and building this forward, and again, reiterate my commitment to help putting this bill into a practical form. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the author, intentions are great, but the implementation gets very tricky, as was touched on by the Metropolitan Council testimony. There are a lot of existing programs out there, and I was wondering if the author could explain how this bill works or interlocks with those. Does it supplant, replace, give us a better idea with how this affects the current framework of programs out there.
Representative Thompson.
Hey, Chair, can I pass that question to Ed McDonald?
You can. Mr. McDonald.
Madam Chair, Representative Thompson and Quam, and committee members, essentially, this bill creates the affordable homeownership incentive account. It has $40 million that the Met Council manage and allows for municipalities to draw on that account. We're not asking the Met Council to implement any of the services that are being offered by municipalities or nonprofit organizations. Is giving them some additional resources to do their work, as well as begin the process of producing more units in the market, but targeting those units to the folks that are experiencing the brunt of discrimination from lenders. NIMI's problems in communities across the metropolitan area. And it also enhances the state's ability to come in compliance with fair housing, and which should be an important thing to the state of Minnesota, since one of our iconic leaders led the way to establish federal fair housing laws. But creating this housing, getting African-American, African immigrants and protected communities and stable homes is just a win for everybody. Dr. Corey talked about the amount of wealth across all communities. Children moving out of the nomadic existence that they live in right now, where they're transferring from school district to school district because families are renting and have to move, and if they attain an unlawful detainer, they're pushed into temporary shelters and homeless situations. Quite frankly, a $2 million pilot project, is a noble step, but it has no impact at all. And it's kind of disheartening to see the Met Council resisting an influx of new resources to help expand and address this problem that has been perpetual probably since George Bunga moved to the Northwest Territory and set up a trading post here to establish the state of Minnesota. So, it's added resources, it's boosting the ability of folks to weather some of the downturn associated with the pandemic, people being laid off, climbing their way back into the economy, and just trying to stabilize their families. Not asking much when you consider the fact that with all of our money sitting there, close to $10 billion of money sitting in excess right now, $40 million being invested to help this segment of the community, shouldn't be a really hard thing for us to do. It's all of our money, and we're saying redirect some of it back so that we can stabilize our families, our children, and move people into a better situation. We'll probably pass a $100 million housing investment bond bill this year that will create more rental housing. And while that is important and should be done, we also think this homeownership effort is equally as important. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, thank you, Madam Chair. Is there someone that can address the how this would interact with the existing programs out there? And instead of going through all the talking points and the intention points, one thing we need to do as legislators look at the implementation and how it affects current programs, because we've had programs to try and help on this for many years now, not just the one that with the $2 million pilot, but this touches on multiple different existing avenues from several different agencies and organizations, and duplicating effort is sort of sometimes causes more confusion and problems. So I want to know how this is going to integrate with and assist in the current programs.
Mr. McDonald, is your hand up again for this?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Now, please.
Yes. Let me just be very pointed, Representative Quam. This is additional money that help build the capacity of existing groups, municipalities, and others that are already doing this work. So it would be a seamless integration into existing activities that exist right now within the metropolitan area.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That wasn't what I gathered from the testimony from the person from Metropolitan Council and from past experience without specifically delineating the other entities and the integration and cooperative efforts with those other entities. Problems consistently and repeatedly present themselves. But let's move on to the next section of questioning is on subdivision 2 and the points of leveraging the municipal revenues, insurance, and other things for influence. Can I have a better idea what this leveraging would be and the results it's looking for?
Is that to Mr. McDonald then?
No, I would hope it would be to the author, so I can understand the author's intent, so that, like Representative Elkins said, we can assist in helping this evolve so it better addresses the intent with avoiding unintended consequences or confusion, because oftentimes the problems pop up because of confusion and interpretation of the statutes that we pass. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Thompson, do you want to respond?
I'm going to defer that to Ed McDonald. But yeah. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, I think I can help respond to that.
Okay, Representative Elkins.
Yeah, so I don't think that this idea is duplicative, and I kind of like the idea of setting up it up as a separate program, but within the overall livable communities umbrella. And I don't think the Met Council is saying that they don't like this idea. I think all they're saying is that it's different from the other livable communities program and would require capabilities that they don't really have right now. So those capabilities would either have to be developed within the Met Council, or we would have to reach out to organizations like those that are testifying today to figure out what would the interaction be between the Met Council and a livable communities grant program, and these organizations, whether they're cities or community organizations that do have the capabilities and the capacity to administer the grants once they're made. So, I think that there are just some details to work out here, but I really like this idea, and I don't think it duplicates existing programs that the Met Council has already.
Madam Chair, maybe I need to clarify.
Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I haven't heard anyone that has disagreed with the intent and the need to improve what we're doing in the area. I'm just talking about having the bill in a form that will be the most effective. And as to the last comments on the state or the Metropolitan Council, quoting, these are really important parts of the housing spectrum, but responsibilities that other agencies / organizations would be better equipped to take on and make an impact on the right way. That is directly from the testimony of the Met Council. And my intent is to make a better bill which avoids some of the problems we've had. And that's why I'm asking these questions along those lines. But I we have to be concerned about what court actions or court interpretations are. And that's why I'm asking about the leveraging of municipal revenues with banking organizations to I want clarification on that leveraging, because it sounds like similar activity to what caused problems in past years of the banks feeling they were pressured to make loans to people that couldn't afford it, and then there were foreclosures because the people weren't in an appropriate situation to maintain home ownership. And some of the points are trying to be addressed in this bill and are touched upon by the Met Council, down payment assistance, home ownership counseling, credit and lending, all of these areas of helping people to be mentored to make that progression and step in their lives. And I would hate to have it cause similar issues that the foreclosure problem we had, which turned a lot of people off to the thought of buying a home. So let's try and set a roadmap, a path, pave the way for success for these people that are moving towards being a first-time home buyer. And by doing more clarity in the legislation, we can actually make that more probable and likely. So that's why I'm asking these questions, because by doing so and having the discussion, we do better legislation and avoid the problems, because we all have seen, while we pass this bill and then a year or two later, a judge says, well, this language is vague or has a different interpretation, and it comes crashing down. And it's more harmful to have people experience the tragedy of an unintended consequence than waiting a little while to do it right. So when they step forward, they're ready and capable and willing and know what's there, and they're not surprised and they don't fail. So the intent of trying to get into the bill is avoid failure and improve success. So again, what is the intent or meaning behind the leveraging of municipal revenues and et cetera that's in the bill?
Okay. I'm gonna go to Mr. McDonald next. I see your hand is still up, so do you want to try to respond to some of Representative Kwan's questions?
Yes. Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Kwan, as you probably know, under Minnesota Statute 6368, Fair Credit is enforced by our Human Rights Department. You may also be aware that in 1977, the great Senator William Proxmire had our federal government pass the Community Reinvestment Act. And all we're saying here is that our municipalities, our state, when they collect the people's money, they reach out to financial institutions and deposit much of those funds in those institutions, which get a chance to invest them and earn money for those institutions. In return, we want our municipalities, our government, that use our money to deposit in institutions to make sure that those institutions are complying with Minnesota Statute 3638 and the Community Reinvestment Act. City of Minneapolis and St. Paul have fair lending ordinances on the books right now that help them with achieving efforts to ensure that financial institutions that do business with those municipalities are providing useful resources in all communities. To your other point, on the subdivision three of this bill, it speaks about the affordable homeownership eligibility, and it asks the council to pull together protected group members and others to basically further clarify how this would operate within given communities. And we know that one size don't fit all, so different communities have different needs as it relates to approaching the affordable housing issues in their communities. So that provision does help them bring together the folks who have expertise in this area across our metropolitan community to begin to navigate how they can make this successful in their communities. So there's no ill will with this. It's just really, in 2022, with everything going on in the world, just breaking down these barriers and making things fairer. In fact, it's really just bringing things in compliance. And so I think this bill is a great step. It should move forward with implementation. Let's evaluate it, come back, make adjustments to it, and continue to move forward.
Thank you. Representative Quam, anything else?
Yes. What are the FTEs that would be added, and is there a fiscal note with this the changes in the DE?
Mr. McDonald, did you want to take that?
It is my understanding that that fiscal note will be prepared, Madam Chair, Representative Quam, as we move forward to the next committee.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Quam?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have concerns with the implementation of the bill, with the shortness of the DE and not having clarity in the, coordinator or meshing in with and leveraging the current programs. So I would think would be that this is not quite right. With it being deadline, you know, second deadline week and rushing, the biggest thing we need to avoid is rushing and having oopses to cause problems. And so I like the intent. I just don't think it's ready. And I'm not sure it would be ready for, you know, it's pretty short order to have an amendment generated for the next committee. I won't be voting against, but I'm going to pass on this bill because in a rush, mistakes are made. And I'm maybe there could be something on an omnibus bill that includes and covers this, or maybe it's just a funding you know, simple as a funding to the Met Council for this pilot program and other existing programs to more fully fund that. I just don't want to accidentally do something that complicates and confounds the existing network and patchwork of programs that are there. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. McDonald, I see your hand is still up. Did you have another comment to make?
Madam Chair, you know, just generally, Madam Chair, I just want to say this in a very nice way. It took Congress 200 tries to pass an anti-lynching law yesterday. And just like any other community, we want the opportunity to just be stable, contributing members to the great state of Minnesota. We're proud of the fact that George Bunga established a trading post here and kind of jump-started the formation of the state of Minnesota. And for someone like me, it's just hard to understand that us descending on this state in the early 1800s and before, building a relationship with the native people here, contributing in all kind of positive ways, that the audacity to say wait longer, you know, can come. We just want to get this done. Let's move forward. And that's all I have to say, Madam Chair. Representative Quam, I understand it, but we can work that all out. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. I am not seeing any hands up at this point. I'll wait a couple of minutes to see if anybody else has any comments. If not, Representative Thompson, would you like to make your closing remarks? You're muted, Representative Thompson.
I just want to thank you, Chair. I just wanted to share real quick with the committee when it comes to home buying. There are numerous perks that come along with just the house itself, like financial stability, financial strength, tax deductions, a permanent home, and a sense of belonging to your community. Homeownership may seem like a daunting task, but the payoff. When we think about our communities that we live in, these crime-ridden communities, I always tell these youngsters the quickest way out of staying out of police cars is 8 hours on the job, right? Now, add a homeowner to that. People get up and go to work, and they're going to work overtime because they got to pay their mortgage. I know when I financed my first car, my mom said, "You're grown. I'm not paying your bills, so you need to go get a job." And so I had to work 8 hours to pay for a car that I thought my mother was going to help me pay for. But also, I learned how to manage my money because I wanted to have nice things. And those gym shoes and the nice clothes my mom used to buy me, like, that was over with. So here I am now, like, an adult. I honestly know that a lot of the crime we see in our community would go away because people would take ownership. You know, the bottles that you see thrown all over the concrete over here, people would actually pick that stuff up and clean up because they own this property. I can remember the old man used to yell at us all the time, "Man, stay off my grass." And he had the most beautiful grass in our neighborhood, you know, because this is his property. I understand why he yelled at us now. I also understand why my dad used to always drive past the railroad track and say, "Son, you know, I built this. I helped build this track right here." And I got so tired of hearing that story, but I honestly know now that he was proud that he helped contribute to his community. He was also a homeowner. But I also know that my next door neighbor makes $750-some-odd every 2 weeks. And she's paying $1,400 a month for a 2-bedroom apartment. And then she's working a second job the lady said to me, I'm not going to pay my credit card this month because I have to pay rent. And I said, well, you're making somebody else rich by ruining your credit. And so I know that these programs, a lot of the programs that we tried before, they're just not working because there's no mistake that Black home ownership is at an all-time low. It has been. And so with that, Chair, I just want to say, please, please help me help my community. And to Representative Quam, I will always, always extend my olive branch, always, to make a bill a better package, because I don't want any, like, we can't afford hiccups, because a lot of well-intended legislation has caused harm to my community. So if you see an avenue to make this better, I'm all for it, and I will not say no. So thank you so much, committee, for hearing me.
Thank you. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 4317, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the State Government Finance and Elections Committee. The clerk, if you will take the roll, please.
Representative Mason.
Mason, aye.
Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Representative Quam.
Pass.
Representative Burke.
Aye.
Representative Bolden.
Bolden, aye.
Representative Hewitt.
Aye.
Representative Mecklen.
No.
Representative Olson.
No.
Representative Joaquin.
Aye.
We have 6 ayes, 2 noes, and 1 abstain.
Okay, thank you very much. The motion prevails, and Representative Thompson, you're on to the next level. And again, thank you. And thank you for all the testifiers as well today. I mean, you did an incredible job of being very succinct and keep making it possible for us to take the whole bill today. So I appreciate that. And as I said, today is our last regularly scheduled meeting. And so I do want to thank all of our staff and all of our members for all the work that you have done this year. Again, thank you very much. And with that, again, thank you for everybody that was here and participated. Have a good day, and the meeting is adjourned.